So, Emmanuel, I want to start moving into some cases, but before we get into that, I've got to ask you to follow up. I was thinking about the talk that you gave. I was asking Neeraj about this, and I understand that maybe it's not practical for docs in practice, but I thought the stuff you were presenting on what's known about localized disease was really interesting. Correlation between Gleason, et cetera. Can you kind of capsulize that a little bit, Emmanuel?
Sure, most of the publications have focused on metastatic disease, but the very first publication, which was the so-called TCGA effort, this looked at primary localized prostate cancers, many of which never metastasized or information about subsequent metastases was not present. What we saw from that initial publication was that approximately 9%, let's say up to 10% of those localized non-metastatic prostate cancers had at least one homologous repair deficiency mutation. A subsequent publication that was led by one of our junior faculty at Johns Hopkins took all of the publicly available TCGA localized prostate cancer data, and there's very little clinical annotation in the TCGA, but one of the things that is reliable is Gleason grade. And so we looked at all the available data about 12 months ago and tried to correlate the presence or absence of an HR mutation with Gleason grade. And what we found was this. In Gleason grade 1, which is 3 plus 3 equals 6, the rates were very low, about 5% overall. The rates of HR mutations increased in Gleason grade 2, which is 3 plus 4 equals 7, and then increased further in Gleason grade 3, which is 4 plus 3 equals 7. Interestingly, and to our surprise, once you get to a Gleason score of 4 plus 3 equals 7, then you go above that, for example, to Gleason grade 8, 9, and 10, you do not seem to get a further enrichment of HR pathway gene mutation. So you kind of peak around 10%, 11% overall, and specifically for BRCA1 and 2, you get to about 4 to 5% in anything that is Gleason grade group 3 or above, which again is a 4 plus 3 equals 7 or higher.
So, Oliver, you may have seen the slide. I think Emmanuel was sort of alluding to it that he concluded his talk where he broke down prostate cancer sort of into genomic biologic subsets. You know, I think about breast cancer, San Antonio breast cancer meeting. We did three separate meetings: triple negative breast cancer, HER2 positive breast cancer, ER positive breast cancer, different diseases. You think prostate cancer is heading in that direction, Oliver? And how do you think it through right now?
Yeah, I do, Neil. But when you look at the prostate cancer itself, certain things are actionable. The mismatch repair is absolutely actionable. And pembrolizumab, very specifically pembrolizumab, is FDA approved for MSI high or mismatch repair, regardless of the assay that is utilized in the recurrent setting. So this has huge implications. It's not a large subset of patients, but it's a very, very important subset of patients. In addition, the homologous recombination repair, which will include the BRCA2, is particularly important for the PARP inhibitors, and we need to talk about it at some point. There may be platinum sensitivity as well, and that's something that we should discuss as clinicians because not always the PARP inhibitors are available. Dissecting beyond that, I think we have some insight into things like PALB2, but less insight into others. Now, CDK12, and Emmanuel has helped to lead a project on this, has also been associated with responses with PD-1 or PD-L1 inhibition. So CDK12 is potentially actionable. We need more data there, unequivocally. The BRCA mutation's actionable. Mismatch repair, actionable. And then a lot of the others we need to learn more about. That's sort of my classification.